Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning to you, everybody, and welcome to another great episode we have here of Suspense Radio. I'm your host, John Robb, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, and this is the last show of the year, and what better way to end it than to have two great guests on. We're going to have Christopher Sanford and Lise Wheel coming up about 10:30. Lise will be on. So I want to thank everybody here for such a great year. I hope you guys all got the December magazine with our Best of 2011 awards in it. Going to talk about that a little bit later. But right now, I want you all to sit back, relax, enjoy, because 60 minutes of the last 60 minutes of Suspense Radio in 2011 starts right now.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to feel you belong.
Again, everybody, we would like to welcome you all back to the last episode of 2011 here at Suspense Radio. And we are going to jump right in here, and we are going to bring on our first guest, author of the book Masters of Mystery, which is The Strange Friendship of Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini. We would like to welcome Christopher Sanford to the show. Christopher, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you, John. Thanks a lot for having me.
No, hey, thank you so much, because Masters of Mystery is kind of a different little book. Like I said, The Strange Friendship of Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini. Can you tell a little bit about the book to everybody, please?
Well, sure. It's what intrigued me about it was it's kind of a role reversal from maybe what you would expect those two characters to be. You've got Conan Doyle, of course, who created the most famous rational character, or certainly rational detective character in fiction, in Sherlock Holmes. And you've got Houdini, who cheerfully used to call himself the world's greatest flim-flam man. And yet when it came to spiritualism in the later part of their careers, they kind of reversed their positions. And Doyle was the absolute gung-ho believer in the occult and in the paranormal, and specifically in communicating with the dead. And Houdini said, after some initial kind of skepticism and exploration of it, he said, "No, it's all smoke and mirrors." So they had this huge battle about who was right and who was more scientifically correct and who had the better evidence for their supposition, and it became a sort of celebrity feud of the day. And now there'd be probably a reality show or some other. They'd be slanging each other in the press and in the tabloids. But in those days, it was done slightly differently. But it generated a lot of heat and a lot of controversy. And that's really what drew me to it. It was two celebrities for the price of one in one book. And this, as I say, weird change of their positions from what you might expect them to be.
Now, for people who might want to know, too, because is this total fiction or is this nonfiction, or is this more nonfiction?
Well, it's all nonfiction, John.
Okay.
I spent many happy hours sitting in archives in England, going through specifically Conan Doyle's letters and papers and diaries that are quite hard to find, but if you apply in triplicate, eventually you can usually get to them. So it's all documented. It's all on the level, and it all really happened, which of course makes it all the more interesting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they always say, you know, that the truth can be stranger than fiction, and in this case, it's very well possibly true that the, you know, that it is. You know, you have two very high-profile people, especially, you know, today's day and age. I mean, everybody tries to, you know, every magician, Chris Angel and all those people always talk about Harry Houdini as their master. And, you know, then you're talking on the mystery side. I mean, you have Arthur Conan Doyle and possibly Agatha Christie as the godfather and godmother of those types of stories. So you have, you know, two powerhouses coming together. And to be able to go back when you say they first met in 1920 had to be very intriguing, and you probably found out a lot of different things that were just surprising to you in doing all the research of that. Can you, like, let us know maybe what is the one thing that maybe jumped out at you between the two of them, either coming together or apart, that, you know, surprised you in the research?
Well, one interesting thing, John, is that Houdini was maybe not overeducated in the formal classical sense. In fact, he wasn't educated really at all in that sense. But he was obviously a very shrewd and cunning guy, and I think, like many performers, he had an eye on his career, and he was an ambitious guy. And he was playing a game with Doyle early on in the relationship, whereby he was being exquisitely polite to Doyle in public and writing him these very florid letters saying how much he appreciated Doyle's research into the paranormal and what a privilege it was to be a friend of Doyle. And, of course, we have some of Houdini's private letters and diaries have survived, and they tell a very different tale. So Houdini would be, on the one hand, pouring this rather floridly written praise on Doyle in public, and then at night in the privacy of his diary, he'd be saying the man is a fool. He's completely deluded. He sees ghosts. He sees goblins. He believes in fairies. And the man's an idiot. So, you know, words stronger than that. So he was playing a kind of a double game. And I think the association with Doyle and the kind of intellectual sort of reflected glory that Houdini derived from that was very important to him. It seems to me that a lot of his career was a quest for respectability. And he always wanted to be more than just what he was, famous, world famous, as he nonetheless was. He wanted to be a writer and a serious artistic figure. And I think the association with Doyle was something that he treasured for that reason, and that he played Doyle very cunningly on one level, and, as I say, on another level, he thought he was a deluded old fool, basically.
Now, for people who might not know your history and what you've written in the past, to show, you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, who is he to write, you know, a story about Arthur Conan Doyle, Harry Houdini? You have published biographies by many, I guess you want to say, could be controversial people like Kurt Cobain, Steve McQueen, you know, Eric Clapton, Jagger, Bowie, McCartney, Keith Richards. I mean, you know, you've been around the block on all of them. Would you say that the book here, Masters of Mystery, is one of, you know, since you've written a lot of biographies, is this one that I guess was just a little bit more on the stranger side? Because, you know, you have a lot of weird stories from those guys. I mean, like I said, we said off air, the suspense of Keith Richards was he going to stay alive long enough for you to write the book?
Yeah.
So was this one a little bit just much more different in the fact of, because, you know, they were, because they're dead, too, first of all, and because of this, you know, the shroud of mystery that goes over top of both of them.
Yeah, it was a bit of a departure, but maybe not quite a complete break. I mean, in any good biography, you've got to have tension of some kind or another, whether, as you say, is the guy going to make it to his 30th birthday, or in Cobain's case, you know, the terrible kind of disintegration that went on. And not long ago, I wrote a book on Roman Polanski, who has plenty of tension in his life.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe a sort of a theme there. But what really attracted me was I was a childhood, you know, convert to Doyle and Sherlock Holmes, like many kids. And it's always fascinated me, this huge discrepancy between the character he created and the man who was doing the writing. And I think Doyle looked on Holmes as a, you know, as a way to pay the bills, essentially. There's evidence that he was one of the few people who was not taken in by the Sherlock Holmes cult, was his author. He was always trying to rise above just being a detective writer, as he saw it. And so, you know, right away, your juices are flowing a little bit. If you can find something like that, there's a tension right away in your central characters' lives. You know, there's Doyle cynically almost writing these what he called cheap pulp fiction stories, and yet his mind was elsewhere. And simultaneously, you've got Houdini, who, as I say, was world famous, as we all know, for the stage performances, and yet his mind was elsewhere too. He wanted to be Professor Houdini, you know, the learned author of tomes, and he did put his name, of course, to several books. And so right away, you think, well, great, there's another layer to this story. It's not just the famous writer and the famous entertainer. There's levels going on there. So that sort of intrigued me, and I think any good biography should have something, preferably more than one thing, going on underneath the surface story. And I think in this book there's plenty of that.
So when people come away from the book and they finish reading it and they put it down and they have a chance to reflect, what's the one thing that you hope that they take out of it?
I hope they'll consider their own, you know, philosophies or their views even on, you know, basically the question that's raised in the book, which is arguably the question, what happens when you die? It's that dark. And, you know, Doyle was convinced as a child that he was brought up in this very strict Roman Catholic, you know, boarding school situation. And we've all heard some of the stories that sometimes go with that kind of education. And it was pretty bleak, I think. And so he was ready in some ways to break from that very austere kind of late Victorian British Jesuit upbringing and find some other way of explaining life's meaning, if you will. And, I think his quest can be seen as a continuous journey in that direction. And he had a lot of scientific and medical learning, which also led him to experiment in areas, for instance, like telepathy and levitation, and he came to some interesting conclusions. So, you know, I think it's food for thought there. I'm not saying it will change anyone's basic life or their religious views, but there's food for thought, I think, in the book, in that you've got this very straight-laced, in some ways, ultimate sort of authority figure, very respectable Edwardian gentleman, and yet he, through a combination of experience, training, and maybe his own childhood problems, comes to these radically, you know, quite in some ways revolutionary ideas about what happens when you die. And I think it's worth studying.
Now, back when you look at like back in those times, in today's day and age, with the celebrities out there, I mean, you know, we got Tiger Woods. I mean, eventually his secrets come out and things of those nature. Do you think that it would be more difficult in today's day and age for iconic figures like now to hide, you know, kind of the underlying person who they are than it was, you know, of course, back in, you know, 1920? Do you think that could ever go on again, you know, and let's say we're talking the year 2050, and we look back now at maybe two iconic figures that people go up and say, wow, I had no idea that they were really like that. But
you
find out in Doyle and Houdini.
Well, yes, obviously the speed of communication now is, as we all know, so much greater. So, I mean, even when Houdini made his break with Doyle, after, as I say, this kind of simulated friendship and respect, they had a huge falling out. But even that took I mean, the physical falling out, or rather the physical kind of broadcasting and transmission of it, took weeks and months. You know, Houdini would write an article which would eventually be published in the New York Times, and it would eventually reach the British newspapers. So, I mean, you had to wait for a long, long time even to hear the latest developments, which, of course, now would be in every living room or every study, every you know, computer terminal within seconds of it happening. So on that level, it's very different. And you'd have, ironically, in my book, you'll see Doyle responding to comments made by Houdini. By the time Doyle had made his response, the original comments were already out of date in many cases. Houdini's position had already changed dramatically because the sheer sort of, you know, sloth of the communications across the Atlantic. So that
right.
part is never going to come back again, you know, the sheer sort of Pony Express aspect of the story. But, yeah, it's a lot harder for someone now to simulate a face, a public face, than it was then. But having said that, there are other examples in the book of people who might surprise you who were also, if not full-scale spiritualists, at least taken to some extent by the occult and by the paranormal. And some of them managed to keep a lid on it right throughout their lives, and we've subsequently found diaries or letters. And that, again, would be hard to do today. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are a few people who, celebrities of this day, I mean, whose personal spiritual practices we might find a little more exotic than they would like us to know about, even in this age of instant, you know, celebrity TV and exposure. I would imagine there might be a few sort of Saturday and Sunday night kind of spiritual events going on that might raise an eyebrow.
And I'm sure TMZ would love to be able to find out about that too.
I keep my, you know, my radar is always turning for any such story. But you know, I have no specific example. I wish I did, but that's just my feeling.
Now, in researching the book here, and I want to remind everybody, we're talking here with Christopher Sanford. The book is Masters of Mystery. It's the strange friendship of Arthur Conan Doyle, of course, the author of Sherlock Holmes, and the famous musician Harry Houdini. And this is a nonfiction book, so you're going to get the ins and outs and the dirt, the whole stuff going on between, you know, like Christopher was just talking about, what they're doing, which is available everywhere. You can get it on Amazon and any place you shop for get books. But what I was going to say was that when you were researching the book here for this, did you turn up names of other maybe famous people in that time that kind of turns you to say, wait a second, I want to dive more into that person, and maybe that's your next project coming out?
There wasn't one particular name that kind of leapt off the page. There were a number of kind of respectable British characters who might not be world famous who were recruits to spiritualism that surprised me. There was a guy called Oliver Lodge who was partially responsible for inventing radio, ironically. There was a sort of battle going on, of course, with Marconi and others at the same time. But Lodge was another one of these superficially very straight-laced, respectable British gentleman of his time. And, of course, at night he was sitting around the séance table holding hands and seeing ghosts, essentially. So that struck me. And there was a British Prime Minister at the time, who Arthur Balfour, who also had some experiences in the séance room. So, yeah, there wasn't, as I say, a headline-grabbing name there. But there were a few surprising friends of Doyle who joined him in those sort of pursuits who you wouldn't immediately have thought from their public image would have done that kind of thing. And there was a Canadian prime minister who used to communicate with his dead dog, so he thought. He had a beloved series of Irish terrier dogs who successively died over the years. And he used to sit in a dark room, and so he thought, here they're barking going on, and we can only speculate, you know, what he really was hearing, but or whether it was just another dog out in the alley barking conveniently. But, you know, there were a number of minor but interesting stories like that. Not one, I think, that, as I say, is going to be a sensational exposure,
right.
But there's a variety of curious instances of people who weren't quite what they seemed to be.
Now, did you go so far as to, in the middle of the book, maybe try to hold a seance of your own to see if maybe you could speak with Houdini or Doyle?
Well, all I can tell you is that it took me, although it's kind of a slim-looking book, it took me a long time to write because I, you know, obviously tried to do it thoroughly and everything as best as I could possibly get it. And it took me, there were three successive Halloweens when I was either, you know, researching the book or actually writing it. I think it was maybe 07 through 10. But anyway, there were three. And on each of these occasions, I mean, not only for its obvious significance, but it's the day on which Houdini died. And on each of these occasions, there was exactly the same time of the day my phone would ring at 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, of course, no one was there. But it could have been a prank. It could have been. But it's an unusually persistent prank for someone to remember the exact time of day and then wait a whole year to do it and then do it again 2 years later. And so that happened three times. And this year I had just finished the book, and it was published just before Halloween, and it didn't happen. So I, you know, we can only speculate as to what it was, but it gave me...
So that's
me,
a couple, that's some chills going up your spine,
yeah,
on that one, I would think, especially the second time it happened. Maybe not,
yeah,
the first time, but then the second time.
I made a note in my diary of the exact time of the call. I mean, it wasn't even an exact hour of the day. It was like 10:04, I think, and it was precisely the same time a year later and exactly again 2 years later. So,
wow.
Yeah, that does give you some cause for thought, yes.
Well, Christopher, what, you know, we got a couple minutes left there. What do you have coming up in the future you'd like to tell everybody about? Or, you know, where can they find more? Like we talked, you don't have a specific website. What's the best place that people can go to find out more information, whether it's about the book or everything else that you've written, like we talked about all the other celebrity autobiographies you have written?
Well, yes. I don't have a website, but if you just key in my name, hopefully you'll get a list of what's available, you know, on any search engine, on Google or whatever, or key in on Amazon, you should get a list of my books. The short answer is that I think perhaps going a rung down the evolutionary ladder from Doyle and Houdini, I've got a book yet again on the Rolling Stones coming out, it's unbelievably 50 years since they started, and so that was considered to be a moment to try and sum them up.
Yeah.
And then maybe going up again a ladder, a rung or two on the ladder, I've got a book on the year 1914, which should appear 100 years after the event, which particularly in Europe, of course, was a apocalyptical year for the beginning of the First World War and a number of other events. So it's kind of a social history, if you will. And who knows, there might be further reference to both Houdini and Doyle in that, because the First World War was really a trigger point for much of the spiritualist debate that took place, for the obvious reason that there were these terrible losses in it. So it's sort of that era revisited. So we're going into the Rolling Stones for a little bit and then back into the world of mysticism and the First World War and the early 20th century.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, Christopher, we want to thank you so much for joining us. And everybody, the book is called Masters of Mystery, The Strange Friendship of Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini, available wherever you buy books in ebook form too and hardcover form. So, Christopher, we want to thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, we look forward to seeing what you got coming out next.
Thank you, John. It was a pleasure.
Yes, it was too. You have a good day.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. So, again, everybody, perfect for the holidays. You're going out Christmas shopping. You only got 1 weekend left because Christmas is next Sunday. Masters of Mystery, The Strange Friendship of Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini, perfect to put in someone's stocking. For anybody who loves to read, you know, nonfiction books and just loves it great, you know, I mean, the underlying mystery here goes on. Again, this is a nonfiction book. Christopher spent many years researching this to find and bring the best to you. Like I said, he is critically acclaimed by writing autobiographies for Kurt Cobain, Steve McQueen, Eric Clapton, Jagger, Bowie, McCartney, Keith Richards, Springsteen, Roman Polanski. You know, he knows his stuff. So this is a great book that you need to go out and get for that person that you're still trying to find out what to get. Here you go. This is where it's at. So I also want to let everybody know, you know, our December issue, like I said, was our Best of 2011 awards. And we would like to recognize that John Gilstrap, with Threat Warning, was considered our best book of 2011. What we did is that we divided everything up into categories again like we did last year. And, you know, we put out, you know, whether it's, you know, sometimes three or four books within a category, they're not ranked within the category. They're just in there. So, you know, we always put them in there for you. And if you email us at editor@suspensemagazine.com, you're able to get four free issues. And we'll ship it out to you via email. And you'll be able to get it and read it. And, again, another perfect time to go look at. Still wondering what you get that, you know, perfect someone. Well, we got the best books here of 2011 that you can always look at. Also, last Saturday, I had the great chance to meet Patricia Cornwell. Her book, Red Mist, came out. We are going to get five copies of that to give away. And anybody who's interested in getting that, email us at editor@suspensemagazine.com to be put on that drawing list, and then we'll get those books out to you, you know, the five winners, when we get them in. Another great author here, Amazon's doing some really good things. I don't know if you guys realize that they have a Thomas Mercer and now a 47 North print that they're doing. And there's a book that's coming out called The Basement, a novel by Stephen Leather. It's one that we have, you know, we don't put a lot of ads up on our website because we just don't want to do that. And, you know, but when we see something that's very good and talented, you know, we want to make sure that we put that up. And so Stephen Leather, The Basement, a novel, is one that you should check out. Go to our website, suspensemagazine.com, click on the ad, go over and read about the book and see what you think. You'll also see that Thriller Fest is up here for July 11th through the 14th. We all know how I feel about Thriller Fest, and that is definitely something that you should all check out if you're a fan or an author coming up, whatnot. You got Agent Fest, you got Craft Fest, you have you know, Thriller Fest. It's three things rolled up into one, and that's one that you need to go out and check out too. Is you know, Thriller Fest 2012, always at the Grand Hyatt in New York City, with Jack Higgins, R.L. Stine, Lee Child, Ann Rule, and John Stanford are going to be highlighting that event, along with, I mean, there's hundreds more authors that go on there. What better place also to go and register for Agent Fest? You got your book done. You don't know who to send it to. You don't know where to go. Well, you go to Agent Fest, and you sit right in front of the agent. You, as fast as you can do, it's speed dating for agents. You sit down, you give them your pitch, you show them your book, you let them know. And, you know, people have been signed many times from there. So that's something you want to consider. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be back with our next guest, who kind of jumped off her Triple Threat series, but she'll be back with it, to do an East Salem trilogy in Waking Hours, and that's Lee Sweal, and we're going to be right back with her in just a second. So listen to this. We'll be right back. right, everybody, we are back here, and I want to thank you, everybody, again for joining us and staying with us here on this great Saturday morning, 1 weekend before Christmas. Where does the time go? I have no idea. You know, I really wish I could build a time machine and maybe just get back a little bit. You know, that'd be kind of fun, just to get back a little bit. But we're going to go on here now, and we're going to bring on our next guest. She's been on, you know, a couple times before with her Triple Threat series in Face of Betrayal, Hand of Fate, Heart of Ice. But she stepped out now. She said she stepped out a little bit here with, you know, Cassidy and Allison and Nicole and went over to an East Salem trilogy, which I love, first of all, because it's a trilogy, so I know there's going to be three. And that builds the suspense. And the newest book by Lise Wheel is Waking Hours. And Lise, we want to thank you again for joining us. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing so great. I just got my Christmas tree. It's still on the top of my car, so I'm going to bring it in today. And you know, we just get things done when we can get things done. But thank you so much for having me on the program.
Yeah. And so I guess the first question is, why did you decide to step away from Triple Threat Club and go here with a new trilogy, the East Salem trilogy, and Waking Hours?
Well, I didn't quite step away from the Triple Threat, because as you mentioned, we've got Eyes of Justice coming out in April, so the Triple Threat
right.
still continues. But I wanted to do something with a little bit of a different twist. I wanted to put something – Triple Threat is set on the West Coast in Oregon. I want to do something out in New York, which is where I am now. I grew up in the West Coast. I'm here in New York now. And I wanted to put this in an idyllic little town and also cast in some kind of supernatural elements to it, that there's more going on than just – not just, but there's more going on than the murder mystery that meets the eye. There's a real battle between good and evil, between, you know, demons and devils. And I wanted to put that with characters that were new and different. And I got that with this Danny, this forensic psychiatrist, very smart woman. And I teamed her up with a former NFL player, Tommy Gunderson, who's kind of a lovable guy. He's got an interesting backstory. And so they team up together. They were high school almost sweethearts. And they team up together all these years afterwards, and they have to solve this crime. They realize that, you know, what's going on in this idyllic town is not so idyllic.
Right, and so I want people to know, too, this is set in today's time, because sometimes when people see, you know, Salem and East Salem and things like that, they might think that it was set back in, like, the
1700s. No, this is today.
This is absolutely today.
I mean, my research is all from Westchester County and what's going on in New York, and And you'll hear references to, you know, things that are happening in Westchester and New York, But I love that idea of East Salem. You know, there is no East Salem. I made up this town, but I thought the idea of Salem kind of connoted that, you know, you're right, the witchcraft. But it's much more a battle between good and evil and devils and demons and angels.
Yeah. And so how difficult was it, I guess, I mean, when you step outside, you know, like, you know, when you go from Triple Threat Club to something that is much different, and then you even have a trilogy in mind. So you have three books in mind that's going to come up that's going to, you know, basically, you know, you got Waking Hours, and you're going to have your second and third one that's going to end probably in a big climactic way. How much of a change was it in writing something different like that?
It's an interesting question. Very different in the sense that I have not plotted through. I'm writing Darkness Rising right now, which is the second part of it. And yes, I have ideas for the third book, how it's going to, quote unquote, end. But I let my characters breathe. In other words, you know, Danny and Tommy, it's a Saturday night. They're going to come over for pizza tonight. We're going to talk about it. And I know I sound like a crazy lady with, you know, people in my head, but to me, my characters, seriously, they really come alive.
Yeah, I know.
And what happens to them happens. I mean, that really, it's so much of me and not just me, but people that I see around me, observations that I make in life, and I try to put those into these, you know, quote-unquote fictitious characters, although maybe I've ordered too much pizza. How am I going to eat three pies tonight?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, here's the one thing, and I applaud authors, because we were talking about this last week, is that and I did a blog about it, was the series character versus the standalone. I love
right.
it. You know, I think the big thing about Harry Potter was, you know, there were seven books. So the seventh book, was he going to live or die? People knew. Where when you have ongoing series, it's a little more difficult because you have to build up the characters and you have to get all their backstory and you have to, and they have to grow with you.
Right.
So when
right.
you decide to write a trilogy, do you think when you're done with book three that you're going to look back and say, why did I say trilogy? Because now I want it to go on, and maybe you either are stuck under the trilogy thing or you're going to go continue. Have you thought about that yet?
Life is never a stuck thing. You're never stuck in life. As long as you're breathing and going, you're never stuck. A trilogy can become another trilogy. Of course. Are you kidding? I want
yeah.
Danny and Tommy to go on forever. And I want my Triple Threat ladies to go on forever. But there's a big surprise in Eyes of Justice, so you got to check out that in April. But that's a long way forward. Look at Waking Hours right now. And
yeah,
you know what?
Yeah,
I've got to tell you, what's been so amazing is the response I've got from readers. So amazing. Because, you know the writing process. You sit there, you probably don't put a ponytail in your hair and wear sweats, but I do.
You never know.
You never know this. But I do, and I sit there, and we were talking off air about, you know, how do I find the time. I find the time in weird pockets.
Yeah.
But it's sitting at my computer, middle of the night, very early in the morning, ponytail, no makeup, and just sitting there writing because I love this. I'm just, you know, just passionate about these characters and what they're going to do next, and I'm excited to find out, and I just write. And but what's so fascinating about that from my perspective as a writer is, wow, I go from my little study to Thomas Nelson, who was the best publisher in the whole wide world, and they take it, they magically turn it into a book and put it out there. And you know what? People read it, and they write back. And to get those messages from people all around the country, wow. I will keep on doing that as long as I get those messages, because that is the most gratifying, most wonderful thing, to have somebody from that you've never met, that you never probably will meet, but who writes and says, that book touched me. That book kept me up at night. I kept the pages straight. I was scared. I loved it. Wow, that's incredible to think from, you know, a little somebody sitting there in their study writing away, that people have that reaction. It is so humbling and inspiring.
Yeah, that's the one thing I always say, is it's very important when an author writes that they need to get somebody emotionally, whether it's negative or positive, because emotion is a big thing. And even if you get, you know, emails that come back and say, I can't believe you killed off that person, I hate you forever, and I'm never going to read
right.
your book again, and then they end up reading the next one. Well, you know what? You touch them emotionally, and it's better than it's like, oh, I forgot that character's name. That's
yeah,
what
who
you
was
never
that?
Want to
you
hear.
Know, right, exactly.
Right. Yeah, and that's very important, and that's the one thing. And like I said, you know, this is book four in your fiction. I mean, you know, you start off with Face of Betrayal, not knowing anything at all about kind of this world, and now you're in four books. You just got to be loving it. Got to be loving it.
I am loving it, John. I'm loving it. This is, you know, I've been so blessed. It's amazing. It's just, it's wonderful. And I will keep going. I will keep doing this and loving every minute of it as long as readers, and you're right, respond. And sometimes it's, you know, well, I can't tell you too much about Eyes of Justice, but there's an
right.
interesting twist. So, and my daughter is very angry with me. But anyway, but she'll keep reading. So as long as people keep reading and I get to develop these series of people that are, to me, so interesting, and their backstories. I mean, Tommy in Waking Hours, his backstory, I can't give too much away, but just take a look at it. I mean, this former NFL player, the reason he's a former NFL player is fascinating to me. And he's a would-be detective. He really wants to, you know, he's got all the money in the world. He's got all the gadgets and all the fame and fortune, but he really wants to be a detective. And he teams up with Danny. And she's, oh my gosh, she's got such an interesting backstory. Her life and what she's trying to do and what she did and what happened to her parents. And then this in this town where things are just really not as they appear to be. I loved, you know, look, in our lives, wherever we are, whether we're in Kansas or Maine or California, we confront good and evil. And these characters are doing that as well. And it's in our lives every day. Well, not every day so much, but overall, overarch in our lives. And I really tried to get to that in Waking Hours and develop that idea of good versus evil, and there are angels, there are demons, and bring that in very subtly. It doesn't knock you over the head. You know, it's Thomas Nelson, so there's no, you know, there are no horrible scenes, there's no swear words, all that. Because I think that, to me, that's lazy writing, I think. I mean,
right.
And there's none of that, but just a good fun and interesting, and you're going to, I think, really enjoy these characters.
And, you know, we have to say also that, you know, you wrote this with co-author Pete Nelson.
Yes.
And, you know, your Triple Threat series has been with April Henry. How was it working with, you know, another writer and Pete Nelson for your book Waking Hours?
Fabulous. Pete is in Westchester, mm-hmm. so he's in the community. And obviously he's a guy, so he can bring a different perspective that I might not, you know, that I might not be so attuned to. And so I think that that was a very good back and forth. And same with April, the sense that, you know, because there's a lot of legalisms, not in the book, but there's a lot of, you know, forensic stuff and real, you know, true crime things. But I wanted to team up with people who are not lawyers, who are not forensic psychiatrists, who are not
right.
involved in that, so that if they have a question and say, well, I don't get that, that doesn't make sense to me, bam, you know, wow, okay, pull back, Lise, explain what that means. And that's so good for me to get that because, you know, you get in any business, you get into it, and you know the lingo and stuff, and you need to really kind of back off from that when you're writing for people that maybe not know, that won't know that, need to have a story told. And that's the most important thing, obviously, about a novel is telling a story.
Right, and I think that that's probably why these CSIs and NCIS shows are so popular, because they do kind of make it easier for people to understand,
yeah.
you know, the CSIs. When, but it's really not that, and people need to understand that that's not real police work, that they're just doing that for entertainment purposes. And sometimes you have to do that in books, too, because the real story is actually probably kind of boring, where they're all just sitting around waiting 3 weeks for DNA and not,
yeah, where's,
you know,
the DNA coming in? Right. But no, but I try to bridge that gap. In other words,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be, you're going to get the real story. You're going to get real stuff about what happens in an investigation. You're not going to be talked down to, but it's also going to be fun and mystery and entertaining, and you're going to want to turn the pages. That's my goal.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here because we're
Uh-oh.
Asking authors, and we'd like to let them know. In the book, Waking Hours, I want to remind everybody here, we're speaking with Lise Wheel, and the book is Waking Hours. It's the first in the East Salem novel series, that trilogy that she just started. In the book, Waking Hours, is there one scene or one sentence where you wrote it and you look back and say, damn, I got it. I got that one to the T. That's the one that I want people to remember to take away from that.
2:13. Yes, waking up at 2:13. To me, that was really smart.
And I'm sure 2:13 has a, just a, I don't want to give anything away, but
you
has
gotta read
significance.
The book.
It has a significance that people need to understand what that means when they read it.
Yeah, you will, but you gotta take a look at the book.
Right.
Because if I tell you that, I'll give too much away.
But that's the thing. So, and that's one of the things that they need to, you know, that's the suspense. That's the build up we give here. So people
exactly.
understand, you know what that is. So
why 2:13? Why that time? Why, what is that?
And everything you just kind of, so it kind of unravels around, you know, that thing where it's almost like if they, people remember, and I don't know if they do, Amityville Horror, the movie, 3:14
right.
was the time. He woke up every night at 3:14. Never understood why he did that. But you do find out why 3:14 was significant in that movie. And I'm sure you'll find out, you know, why 2:13 is significant in the book Waking Hours. And when you also mentioned that East Salem is a fictional town,
right.
you had to sit down and literally think of a town and create it and put it fiction-wise. How was that experience for doing something like that, too?
Oh, fabulous, because this is, you know, I live in Westchester, so to be oh. able to, you know, to be in this community and see and try to make try to make fiction of what I live in reality was a lot of fun. And that's what's just so much fun about fiction, is that you can take a lot of what you know in real life, in reality, from your experiences. Or, you know, I've been a reporter, I've been a prosecutor, I was a prosecutor, I've been a teacher,
uh-huh.
all of those things together, and you put that, you put all those things together and you can make it out fiction. That is, I mean, it's not a chore. That's fun. Are you kidding?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you get to go back into the depths of your mind for stuff that you probably never would have ever thought about, and now you get to put it up.
John, you think I have depths in my mind?
Well, of course, you got to have everybody's got some depths in their mind. How far they go, that's the difference. You know, you just never know. But
I appreciate the compliment that I have depths in my mind.
Yes, you have depths in your mind. So now, 2012, I take it that we're probably going to see two books come out of you then, the next Triple Threat series and then the next East Salem series.
Yep, we've got
series.
Eyes
probably
of Justice.
Probably going to come out near Halloween, right?
We've got Eyes of Justice coming out. It's all done, wrapped up. It's the cover is on Amazon already.
Yep.
We're just doing the final touches on that. Darkness, that'll come out on, I think it's April 3rd. And then Darkness Rising will come out in October. We're working on that one right now, doing, you know, drafts and redrafts of that. So that's going to be my next project for the next few months, is to get that just perfect and ready to go. And it is even scarier than Waking Hours. But it's, you know, I know it sounds corny, but I just feel so blessed by the way that people have reacted to Waking Hours.
And like I said, there's nothing more, I guess, you know, solidifying than for you to sit there and go back. And then, because you're always nervous when you write a book and you send it out, even if your past books got good reviews, how is the public going to like this one?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe no one will read it. You know, maybe they'll hate it. Right.
But the good thing is all your books have been more popular than the predecessor, so you have to look forward to that. And now, for the next 2 years, people know, for Halloween, because I have a feeling that Thomas Nelson is going to put the third book out Halloween too, that now we have to look forward to books 2 and 3 for the next 2 Halloweens.
Exactly.
And that's good too. And then you have no idea about the Triple Threat on how far that's going to go, so people look forward to that, and that's a good spring thing that's coming out. And I was also going to know, are you going to be at Thriller Fest talking about Eyes of Justice, since your book comes out in April and that's in July and it's right in your hometown in New York?
Is it really? Well, you know, send me an invite. I have no idea. I would love to. In fact, weren't you there last year? I think you were there last year, weren't you?
We were there last year. Yeah, we weren't able to connect. Remember, we were trying to connect, and I don't think you were in town or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we'll be there. It's July 11th through the 14th, and that's a way that, when you know, you're going to meet the public and go out, and you can have both books there and sell them out and talk to people about it. I mean, it's a fabulous time. I mean, it's a
fabulous time. All right, well,
you know
what? You're gonna send me a private email or something like that so that you and I can coordinate that. That would be fabulous. Of course I'd love to be there, and I'd love to meet you, John, finally in person.
Absolutely. I know, finally. That would be fabulous. So, well, I'll tell you what, Lise, you have a wonderful time. Your Christmas tree is calling you, I think, from your car.
I know. It's a 7-footer. It's on the top of my car. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it's going to. It's probably going to be, like, you know, leaning left and right and all over the place. But who cares? It's a Christmas tree. Yeah.
Now, and real quick before you go, are you going to be anywhere where people can meet you? Or is your book tour kind of done now until April, probably?
Book
when the tour's
done until April. Although, you know, you could always write me at leasewheelbooks.com. It's LIS.
Mm-hmm.
WIEHLbooks.com. Write me there, or go to Thomas Nelson. You know, you know, what would be wonderful is if you like Waking Hours, only if you like it, write a review on Amazon.com. You know, go wherever and just take a look at it. Go to your good Christian bookstores. It's there. And I'll tell you, John, I think I respond to, unless I get, you know, caught up in internet, cyberspace, whatever, I respond to every email I get at leasewheelbooks.com. I really do. So let me know what you think.
Well, thank you so much, Lise, for coming on. And, you know, we're going to talk to you again in April and hopefully meet up with you finally in July.
That would be great.
My wife and I will be there. So,
wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be fabulous.
Wonderful.
All
right. Let's hit the date.
Yes, it is. Merry Christmas. Have
a great
holidays.
Christmas. Happy
and
New Year.
Yourself. We'll talk to you. Yes.
Okay.
And you have
Take
a good
care,
one.
Then.
We'll talk to you later. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
So again, everybody, that was Lise Wheel, and her latest book is Waking Hours. an East Salem novel ghost story. I mean, it's kind of all in the, not really ghost, supernatural story. Kind of, it's a little different than her Triple Threat series, of course, which is going to be a new book out, Eyes of Justice, coming out in April the 3rd for all those fans. But Waking Hours, again, we've given you today two books, without a doubt. You go out right now. You have time. You don't know what to get. You're walking around the mall. You're listening to us, and you're not saying, John, what do I do? What do I do? I'm telling you what to do. Masters of Mystery by Christopher Samford, who just came on. Waking Hours by Lise Wheel, who was just on. And you can go get those books, put them in the stocking stuffers, and they're going to love you because now you've turned them on to two authors that they might not have known about. And then they can go back and get Leo's other books in the Triple Threat series and look forward to it, and they're going to love you. I mean, you know, people talk about Pajamagrams and Harry and Dave and all this stuff. They get, you know, the Jam of the Month Club. I'm giving you entertainment right here with authors that you might not realize of books that are going to last you a lifetime to be able to turn you on, and that's what we do here. So I just don't know what else to say. I mean, what else am I going to say? That's just what you got to do. I can say this. That this was our last show of 2011, and it has been such a lot of fun to come to you guys and talk and have great authors. We've been, you know, extremely honored to be able to talk to the authors that we have. All of the shows you're able to go back and listen to anytime you want to see and hear straight from the author what's going on inside their head when they write the books. You know, you get to hear that behind the scenes. You can't hear that anyplace else. You're going to hear that here. That's where you're going to hear it. And we're just honored to be able to have great authors like we did today in Christopher Samford and Liz Wheel on to talk about their books, to give you the inside scoop so you know what's going on, you know what, you know what you're going to get, you know, when you get in there and get it. We start off next year, January 7th, with a triple threat of our own guest on there. It's going to be an hour-and-a-half show with Raymond Corey, Andrea Creamer's back, and John Lescross. So, you know, we come right out of the box here with, you know, three fabulous authors, and we're back on January the 14th with John Land and Robert Fitzpatrick. They wrote a book together, and then Richard Codrey. And then January 28th is going to be Neil Barr and Jonathan Green. Neil Barr, and you might realize the names from Law & Order. They have a book that's out, and, you know, we'll have a second guest that's going to be on January 28th. You can go to suspensemagazine.com, click on the Suspense Radio button. You will see the guests that we have coming out there. You're able to listen to past shows. You can check us out. All the shows are archived. Anything that you want to know, anybody that you want to hear, back from Patricia Cornwell last year, you know, to anybody that we just had, you know, this year and any time else, you know, you're able to go and listen to all those great authors, and we're just so happy to be able to bring it to you. We want to say congratulations again to John Gilstrap, who won our Best of 2011 book. Threat Warning was the name of the book. What do you know? There's another one you can go out and get. You know, when you read the magazine, that the reviews and the things that we put in there, I want to also preference, you will not see bad reviews in our magazine. If we wrote a, if we read a book that we just don't feel is very good or something of that nature, then we probably, we will not write a review on it, because we're not going to just slam and write bad reviews. There's too much negative press out there already, and we're not into negativity and anything like that. So anything that we have in the magazine, we recommend that it should be on your shelf and you should be reading it. No matter what genre you're reading, that's something that you should be reading. I got a busy day today. I'm taking my 15-year-old daughter, just turned 15, to see a concert. You can all please pray for me as I'm going to go see four bands that I typically would not see, but she is into them. Hollywood Undead, Black Veil Brides, Asking Alexandria, and Avenged Sevenfold. And you do know I do love heavy metal, and I do love that kind of music. This might be just a little on the weirder side for me, but you know what? It's all worth it when you make the memory, especially with your family to go. And, you know, that's what the holidays are about. It's making the memories. It's making those things. It's being able to go back and look and say, you know, you might not enjoy it, but your kids do, and that's what's important. You know, you might not like playing cards all that often, but your kids do, so that's why you do it. You know, I might not like Asking Alexandria or Black Veil Brides, but I go because that's what she likes and that's what she does. I got earphones, I got iPod, you know, no big deal, and it's going to be fabulous people watching. I'm going to tell you that right now, so that I'm looking forward to that, because nothing better than going to a concert and just watching people looking around. I mean, that's better than any state fair you can ever go to, I'm just telling you right now. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to end you with this one. And in only Suspense Magazine and radio style can we end it. You're not going to hear holiday music here. You know, it's not going to be the nice Santa Claus is coming to town or anything like that. You know, instead, we're going to bring it to you the best way that we know how to. Thank you, everybody, for a great 2011. We will see you in January 7th, 2012. Check out SuspenseMagazine.com. Everything we have to offer. Go back and listen. Go out and get. We want to thank Lise Wheel for coming on today in her book, Waking Hours, LiseWheelBooks.com, and Christopher Sanford for coming on in his book, Masters of Mystery, with Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini. See you guys, everybody. You guys have a great 2011. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays. Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. Thanks so much. See you January 7th.